You know, you kind of try to get them to play their greatest hits, but also ask them about, you know, the sore spots without being a dick.
Yes. You want to disarm them a little bit, you know, with like, you know, softballs or whatever. But like, yeah, I because then there's times where an episode's done and I'm like, shit, I should have like pressed them a little bit more on whatever. But then I'm also like, maybe I didn't need to, or maybe next time or whatever.
And
I
think also. There's also the risk of, you know, when you ask someone, if you don't press them enough, then the people might think that you're in agreement with them. Because I'm kind of I'm nice, you know, I don't try to be, I'm not a bitch on my podcast and not try to, you know, persecute people for their beliefs. So if I really dig down and like ask people about their beliefs about phrenology and stuff like that, and you know, if I'm not too pushy about it, they might think, oh, actually Alex agrees with this guy. So, you know,
that is a thing. Cause it's like Keith had mentioned the thing and I was like, should I say something? And I'm like, no, it's not even worth it. And then I'm like, is someone going to think that I agree with Keith about this? And I'm like, I don't know. It's whatever. You know, people are going to formulate whatever off of that. Like, it's just how it is. You can't control the reaction.
Yeah, and if you get, like, too deeply involved with something like that in a disagreement, like, early on in a conversation or something, you might put up a wall or two that you don't intend to actually put up there. And then it makes it a little bit harder to actually dig through to see what it is you do agree on, which is ultimately what I'm a little bit more interested in.
And Keith Woods is a very smart guy, I have to say, without agreeing with everything that he's ever said. But yeah, he's a great, you know, conversationalist. He's like super deep into, you know, history, political science, all that stuff. So yeah, you know, he's definitely someone people should be talking more about.
I think we had a very productive conversation with him. And then like when that thing comes up, you know, it's just like crickets and you move past it.
That thing where scream disavow and
that thing we're talking about, of course, being ivermectin.
No, bro, if ivermectin comes up, I'm repping it hard.
The IQ, the ivermectin question.
So I'm at Slaboid T.
All right, this is Shit Spouter 37.
This is Black.com Pills.
This is the Fed Post.
All right, so, okay, let's see. I mean, yeah, we don't have to get too much into detail about this, you know, this Texas law thing. I mean, I don't know if this even like, if you're even aware of all this stuff, Alex, out in Romania, or like, there's like,
yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, I don't know if this is, we don't need to be too current about it, but yeah, I mean, you know, the abortion thing has come back in conversation, all that. I mean, I don't know if you guys, this is like, as soon as there's like a culture war thing, I sort of like tune out a little. So I don't have strong feelings about this. I don't know if Slob or Alex, if you guys have any feelings about this, or you think it's just like a trending thing.
Abortion's always going to be there. I do hope that we never stop talking about it, because it's one of those things that it really is a complex moral question. It's not something, it's very hard to actually come down on it and, you know, unthinkingly just say, oh, this is right, this is wrong. You know, it's really tough. And I mean, now I've recently had a baby and I'm a completely changed person. Like, I really have, you know, I'm just a different person now after crossing that threshold, and I have a completely different perspective on it. You know, that it's a baby. That's what I can say. Like, while it's in there, it's a person, and it's like doing stuff, and you're connected on a crazy level with it. And it's such a transcendent, weird experience that you really cannot simulate if you're outside of it. You know, you kind of have to go through it to understand it. So, yeah, it's really tough. Just imagining, just kind of callously, you know, disposing of this person, and also kind of getting to meet my baby and just loving it more than anything in the world, you know, after it's been born. It's, you know, just the insanity of dismissing this question, like, you know, off the bat, yep, and saying, oh, it's chill, it's a clump of cells. I mean, you're a clump of cells, you know, it's you know, maybe a little bit more complex, but, you know, where's the line? Where do we draw the line? So,
yeah, I feel like you're like the angle you just had on it is like kind of dead on the money, because personally, I mean, this is my own opinion here, but like I ultimately still do, you know, probably come down as pro-choice, but mm-hmm. But just where this whole thing is right now, I think that lib discourse around abortion is just like one of the ugliest examples I can think of just like bourgeois decadence.
It ties right in with that antinatalism bullshit too.
100%. That's a great point.
Like, yeah, these things are gross. We don't need any more people. Fuck, like, all things about life, whatever. It's just completely nihilistic, like, terrible bullshit. Like, it doesn't take into account any of the actual, like, moral nuance involved in it at all. It just, like, posits that, like, oh, there's no morals to this at all. There's no type of morality here involved. It's just purely, this is nothing. Which is, I think it's not really fair to sum up that way, even no matter how you really feel about it.
Yeah, I think COH and I are probably, like, I'm going to put words in your mouth here. I feel like we probably have a pretty similar position here, which is, like, I think that it does kind of come down to a class issue at the end of the day. The other day I kind of had a sly post of just, like, what if we just had, you know, significantly, like, a lot much more severe limitations on abortion for people above a certain income bracket or something like that, because because this stuff is these ways are carried a lot more by poor people, you know, people that need to just the absolute demonic decision you have to make of getting an abortion because you just simply can't. Mm-hmm. You know,
you can't provide the life that's like going to be any type of like productive or safe or healthy for a child or yourself, possibly.
Exactly. And like that's horrifying. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, you see these broads in like Brooklyn though that, you know, it's like what was that post everyone was sharing?
Like, they're rocking the uterus graveyard. They're talking about like, yeah, I've had like 8 abortions and I still don't feel shit about it and keep drinking my iced coffee, bitch.
Exactly. Now, at the same time, too, not to, you know, like, that's my position, right? At the same time, though, like, I also am just like encouraged generally to see like much more, what's the word? Like, substantive people on the right taking the reins on certain issues, as opposed to this kind of like nihilistic neocons that are just kind of like, you know, pay lip service to cultural conservatism and then actually don't push it in any direction. And so even though I might not even like agree with them ultimately on this issue, I would rather have them at the helm and like take that W than, yeah, just like these like free market vapid demon people, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think the main question here is about, you know, individualism and, you know, how do we see, where does one individual end, and you know, is there an overarching obligation to a more collective dimension, be it your family, be it your community, be it humanity in general? And I think, you know, neoliberalism is essentially, the answer is no. This is essentially what it means. There is no, and you are here to be either a perfect consumer or a perfect recipient of whatever the state wants to give you, because you're nothing on your own, obviously, because you need a form of collective support in any way, because, you know, we are that type of primate that exists in a collective. And if you don't have a natural collective, you know, there comes the market to plug it in if you have enough money, or the state to offer you a crutch if you're that destitute, or have, you know, destroyed yourself pursuing whatever individualism you were offered. So I think, you know, on the issue of abortion, that's essentially the question. It's not like, I know in cases of rape or things like that, these are like the edge cases that always kind of break the whole argument apart, because these are extremely rare, obviously. But in most cases, this is a preventable situation. Usually, you know, you can really take a lot of precautions. And the downside that's presented always is that you lose your freedom. You know, yes, you lose your freedom, but you also have an obligation to that child once it's there. It really isn't just, you know, the parameters of the question aren't just about you. They're not just about you. They're also about the father, which is something that almost never comes into the discussion. Like, what are his obligations? What are his rights in regards to this child? It's really a shit show, and you know, the libs really don't want to open up that can of worms. And I'm kind of heartened that there's a more nuanced conversation on the right, like you just said. You know, people are really starting to think about these problems, or really starting to, I don't know, to look at these edge cases, but also to look at kind of the philosophical underpinnings, like why are things like this and why, how should they be, you know, about natural law and things like that. So I don't know, that's been attractive to me. That's kind of why I ended up in these corners. You know, it's a much more, I don't know, flourishing conversation. You know, it's not dumb.
No, absolutely. And like hell, like just the foregone conclusion that's made by a lot of people, that just like constantly being sexually active is like not just something that like needs, like just the fact that is never negotiable, right? Mm-hmm. That like,
well,
like
that's the ultimate freedom there, right?
Right. And it's this swinging in the other direction. I feel like so much of it is like kind of in response to like abstinent sexual education. I remember that always being a thing people talked about. Right. And so now it's that you can't ever possibly ever expect anybody to abstain from sex, which is also really ironic just because everyone's like in agoraphobic
incel now. Nobody's right? fucking anyways. Apparently.
Yeah, nobody's fucking numbers. Anyways. But in, you know, if they do, it needs to be like ideologically inflated.
Yeah, but that's a key part of the hype of reality, bro.
No. Okay, there it is.
In what way can you expand on that?
If you can keep people like caught in this like idea that like, oh, well, everyone's fucking all the time. And like, you know, you need to be constantly into that, even though you aren't like yourself, you can go on believing that like this reality that you yourself are experiencing to not be true is actually the good and real existing reality that's going on around you. It's just like another very like baseline level of which they're just like flipping into like upside down world type of reality. And it's also like it creates these like, it's like the consumerization of more sacred acts. There's like neoliberalism essentially sinks its claws into any type of like sacred act or any type of boundary of human relations or any type, and tries to like erode those away. And then it just tries to make them profane. So now it's like the profanation of all culture, to where now we're all like, it's promiscuity culture, where actually that's the best thing and the most natural way to live and this, that, and the other, disregarding the fact that like, you know, sometimes there are things in life that we hold to be a little bit more sacred or above just pure natural drive, that I think sometimes it's good to actually do that. And that's kind of part of what being a human being is kind of balancing, well, what is my instinctual drive here? And what do I think is like morally correct and the right way for me to live my life? And people are just trying to like negate the whole aspect. And it's a very nihilistic bullshit too. Like, I don't know.
Well,
it's
also like in addition to all this, just like, look, I mean, we literally, just to keep the wheels on economically, we literally rely on letting people in. I mean, you know, I don't know what the case is in Romania, right? But talking stateside, we rely on a lot of fucking immigration, right? And this is on top of the fact that we have like rampant homelessness already. And, you know, I made the case earlier that, you know, I think that abortion is maybe an unpleasant necessary thing given the current situation, but I mean, look, like at the same time also, like, you know, you have this like so many cases, like this kind of like plateaued you know, depressed birth rates in Western liberal countries. And if we actually just changed our fucking approach to how we, you know, supported family planning and all these things like that, I think that the argument of just the factors of poverty and everything on this situation are totally contingent. It doesn't need to fucking be this way. You know what I mean? We don't literally need to be. You get what I'm saying? I think that that's a serious thing to consider as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, this term neoliberalism, you know, a lot of people make fun of it, and you know, it's kind of this it does describe this overarching situation that we're in, but I don't necessarily think that it's like a centralized thing. I think it's like an emergent situation that happens kind of in a way at the end of need, you know, at the end of friction. Obviously there are people that are more needy and they experience more friction in society, but we're at the point where to make surplus value in the economy, you're not really making widgets, or, you know, you're not really fulfilling needs. No one's, you know, you're not really providing a relief to hunger and rain coming into your house. You're creating dopamine triggers. You know, you're essentially gaming the lizard brain to milk it. And the people who are gamed the most are actually the people at the bottom of the hierarchy. You know, if you go into a poor neighborhood, it's all, I don't know, in England, it's Paddy Power. I don't know, like these kind of mini casinos and betting parlors and, I don't know, dollar stores and places where you can buy just, you know, junk and things like that. So it's, you know, you're gaming these essentially neurotransmitters at that point. And I feel like that's kind of where this power comes from, because what this tells us is that you really don't need people around you. You don't need your family. You don't, you know, it's kind of like almost like a revealed preference, they call it in economics. Like, you know, you could say you want something, but actually you need to observe how people actually act to be able to make economic predictions about their behavior. And a lot of people's revealed preference is that, you know, they would like the hyper palatable food. You know, they would like to, you know, be hikamori shut-ins and watch porn 6 hours a day, or, you know, however many hours is possible. They would like to just, you know, play a certain simulation and not interact with, you know, the friction of real life, you know, with real people. They don't want to get in the argument with the baker. They're just going to order everything offline, online, or, you know, all of these things are possibilities now.
And add on to that fact, I mean, this is something that I feel myself, like, you know, I go to the fucking stores in my neighborhood and it's like, oh, there's a sneeze guard up. There's still stickers on the fucking floor. Do I need to wear a mask at this place? Do I not need to? How close should I stand to people? What am I, you know what I mean?
What's going to freak out if you walk in? And you're
exactly. What's the demonic trigger word that these people have had? Just like. Just
ivermectin.
Right. Blasted into their brains like hypnotoad style. Like,
yeah, he's been watching the news shut in like 24/7.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And like so many times this week, just running errands after work, I'm just like, honestly, like, I don't even like going out in this.
Yeah.
This fucking sucks. And like, that's not even who I am. You know what I mean?
Yeah. It's like the deconstruction of all social relations, like to the most like base things. You don't even know really where to start anymore. You're like feeling like maybe you're having to like relearn. Well, I don't even know what I'm supposed to do in this store anymore. I don't even know what I'm supposed to do in this store anymore. It might be different from this one down the street. So like you're always just up in the air and confused. Like you don't really actually know exactly what the set state of reality is or who, like that's another part. Like they can prop it up constantly to where you're confused. You're always just kind of bewildered into between what's the next edict, what's the next order, what's the next thing I need to do that I'm not actually used to, or like what's the next social relation that I have to like wrap my brain around and understand that's just coming out of nowhere, that's just some made up bullshit. And like what you're saying about it making it like harder for you to want to go outside or like go down to the store because it's just miserable, or like Alex was saying where people don't want to go and actually have the social interaction in the first place with an actual person because it's just easier for them to, I don't know, order the thing online. And it's like that leaks over as well into what we were talking about before with like promiscuity culture, because people are like not wanting to actually put themselves out there and experience the real intimate relationship. So instead they want to instead just put that into the market, and they can like get these little apps, they can get little things, string together meaningless hookups and things left and right, and try to get a fulfillment of that type of life though. But without actually putting in the work to actually build these relationships and things that are actually like sacred bonds between people, it's just instead, let's just fill that hole in the market, on the market, on the market.
And it's, you know, when essentially, you know, humans are machines created to overcome friction, overcome hardship. And, you know, once you remove many layers of that friction, I mean, I know there's a lot of metaphors stuck into this. Humans aren't machines and they're not necessarily created and all this stuff. But essentially, you know, the purpose, there is a purpose to how humans exist. And it is to engage with their environment, to, you know, to be creative, to overcome, to, you know, and all of these, all of this effort imbues things with meaning. And what are they overcoming things for? They're overcoming things for their group, for their family, for their friends, for the people close to them. You know, once you sever one, the friction and the hardship, and then two, the ties to the group because of the friction, then there's not really much left. And then you're just kind of on these hedonic treadmills, you know, running on empty. And obviously, you know, you're there for predation. You're there, you're opening up your limbic system to all of these providers to come to plug into their systems and I don't know, stroke your neurotransmitters until you know, lull yourself to sleep.
No, yeah, I think that's a great point because, yeah, that's something I always notice of, like, the abundance we have has sort of killed a lot of the needs. It's killed a lot of the reasons for traditional right-wing social values and things along those lines. Like, you have everybody sort of like, I remember, like, when I was younger, because I've always been atheist, but I was like 13 or something, like watching like Hitchens debate like theologists or whatever, and they'd make these arguments like, you know, what's the point of getting to heaven if there's no hardship on the pathway or whatever? And I always thought that was a dumb argument when I was younger, but it makes complete sense. It's completely true because it's like there's really, you know, you can't. I mean, anybody who's lived long enough, you know, has obviously seen this in their own life. Like, you can't really have any highs without any of the lows, obviously. Mm-hmm. So, like, you need to do that. But
it's cliche for a reason because it's like natural truth.
Exactly. And I think we're sort of, a lot of us are born, especially the younger generation, are born into this sort of frictionless world, and they just they have no sense of like all the hardship that went towards that. So they're sort of, their gauge is all screwed up.
Yeah.
And they feed into that, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Yeah. Then they experience a different type of friction altogether, which is just like this like internal gnawing of like existentialism of not understanding what the fuck it is that is making them feel so just like inept or not great, or like, you know, these things that's making them feel not at home in the world that they live in, and just being so just like removed from the actual physical reality around them. You know, they create that space intentionally.
It reminds me of just like the idea of I was reading some Lash lately, and he's talking about the culture in which it became more and more normal for parents to just kind of assure their children that they just have innate value, that just innately they're just so great on their own. And like, you know, obviously, like, you know, my mom and my dad, like, you know, humble brag here on the podcast, my mom and my dad love me, guys. But like, but like, just this idea of like, you know, you're great as you are, as opposed to like how the world like actually works, which is like your value at like in a lot of ways obviously comes from like what you do, what you produce.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, people know they're useless and they act like it. You know, they mm-hmm. lash out and then in weird ways, and they create these mm-hmm. these strange, you know, Baroque identities around that core knowledge that they wouldn't survive for like half an hour in the wilderness. You know, they should be, you know, Wolverine shish kebab in 5 seconds.
Yeah, telling that Wolverine before he sinks his teeth into you that you're sapiosexual or
yeah. My pronouns are
yeah, right, exactly. And I mean, so this just isn't even a coherent way of thinking about the self, but mm-hmm. I guess that might be another
if you're not someone who's agoraphobic or hypochondriac, whatever, they're definitely turning you into one. You know what I mean? Like, they're definitely like pushing you towards that mindset.
Dude, I feel like even customer service and shit has just been like complete dog shit since the pandemic started too. So like, even when you go out and try to experience like doing the things that you used to be able to do, it's like, A, there's a huge labor shortage and stuff like that. Yeah. So there's not as many people working, but also B, like it's been used at, like by companies and stuff as a way to just streamline and cut out any type of like useful thing for this, the actual consumer. Yeah. And so it's just like miserable experience after miserable experience. They're not offering the same type of services that they did, or it's not quite in full anymore. And it's just like, dude, what the fuck am I even here for?
Economy, yeah.
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 Yeah. Exactly. I tried to get in touch with Facebook support for like a business thing for some ads I was doing in my day job. And it's literally like a never ending circle that they put you in. There literally is no Facebook support for my mm-hmm. side of the business. There is no one. It's just, you know, one of those things that sends you to a form that doesn't get sent anywhere, and it just puts mm-hmm. you in an infinite loop. And that's customer support. So you never get to talk to anyone. Now.
Dude, honestly, like I have a few friends that do it. And like, I've obviously just interacted with it before. I feel like most people have, but like just technical help desk, you know, this department that exists in basically every, you know, medium to large company is like actually a pretty good indicator of just how post-COVID life everywhere is now mm-hmm. of just like this weird little circle of half accountability and no one like just the only certain thing is that no one's actually full on reading the thing you're saying and like coming up with an original response to it that's handcrafted by a fucking person. And like, and it's not just the old call center thing of like, oh, I don't want to talk to a fucking robot. It's also just, it's like this Baroque system mm-hmm. to just file down every sharp object. And it's just a fucking nightmare. It's a fucking nightmare. I don't want these fucking sneeze guards up anymore. I want to ask someone a fucking question. Anyways, the world's a DMV.
Speaking of the sneeze guards, just real quick, they came out and said that actually it turns out sneeze guards and plastic barriers, the CDC thinks that they're actually probably accelerating the spread of COVID rather than inhibiting it, because of the fact that it's just leaving all those particles and shit right there at everyone's face level.
No way, bro. Wait.
Yeah.
Were you saying that like 2-foot glass that like...
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Is not effective? What?
Yeah, you're saying that thing that I have to clean every single day at work and put my hand near that people are coughing and breathing on, that I then sometimes I lean over and I accidentally bump my forehead on. You're telling me that's not helping me not get COVID?
You're telling me this.
I'm going to fact check this later.
Yeah, you're telling me this for the first time.
Those are wonderful guards, wonderful little plastic things there.
Right. Yeah, but if you think about the mechanism of this stuff, it's like they just put it up, but they can never walk it back. Like,
oh yeah,
that's the thing. How these, you know, even with the vaccines and everything, you know, all of these systems they're put in place at one point, you know, through one swift decision, and to justify that decision, to justify that agency or whatever, you know, that's come up with this shit, you can never walk it back, because it would mean you'd have to, one, you know, fire all these people, you know, deconstruct this, you know, complex machinery that you've built, and also admit that you were wrong. And if you admit that you were wrong, you have to admit that science was wrong. And you just can't do that, because, you know, science is science, and science changes from one day to the other, and you need extra agencies. But the sneeze guards are never coming down. You know, the children always wear the mask. Everyone needs the boosters. You know, you can't walk this stuff back. It only goes from simple to more complex and more ridiculous with every iteration.
Oh yeah, I mean, you can't walk it back. You need to double down on it. And so these
awfuls, triple masking.
Yeah, exactly. And like all these awfuls that just get are regurgitating more and more just like violently hateful rhetoric, and not like in this weird, you know, like hate. Hate is like a school of magic in modern political thought. Like, oh, hate, it's a thing. It's like a thing you can touch, but just like hateful in that, like, they just hate people. They hate people that there are their political opponents. You just double and triple down on that.
Yeah, and they infinitely hate them in a kind of in a productive way, in the mm-hmm. sense that, yeah, you know, they're backed up by the powers that be. They're encouraged mm-hmm. to hate them. They're validated to hate them. They're essentially fed through this validated hate from up high. You know, you are garnering status. You're harvesting status by hating these people harder and harder, because they're the underclass. They're the other. So, you know, fuck these people. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, and there's a certain kind of yeah, it's the awful. It's kind of that stereotype of in a way, highly agreeable person who's just there to go along to get along and is really, yeah. you know, can smell status from a mile away. And it's that archetype. And it's shitty, you know. It is the, like, middle-aged white woman who's just, like, has her antennae geared towards, you know, where status is coming from.
It's like you're saying, it's like a state-sanctioned hatred. It's like that kind of goes back to what you're talking about with the friction thing, because like stuff like that, releases like that are actually necessary for people to have, not necessarily hatred, but like those types of communal releases as a people and as a community. But they're actually taken out of our lives in society nowadays, just based upon the way that we live. So what they can do is they can just instead sanction it out through like emotional means, and then use it like functionally like this as like a way to just like, you know, as a discursive method, rather than actually like having the moment where the community can get together. Like for instance, like Hasidic Jewish people and other types of like tribes and stuff like that, they'll like get, you know, some sort of animal, you know, like a chicken or a goat or whatever, and they'll cast all their like town's demons into it. And then they'll like exercise it. They'll kill the goat at the end of the day. You know, they'll do this and that. And it's all very like ceremonial. It's very sacrificial. But in that, it's almost like a
COH cleanse, tells our audience kind of to kill animals.
No. Don't do that. But yeah, exactly. It's a scapegoat.
It's in Leviticus. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's useful. I mean, you have to do it's either an animal or, you know, it's just one person. But now it's like half of your guys' country. So I don't know. That's scaled up quite fast.
Yeah, you can't materialize it into like a single person or thing anymore, because you can't actually materially go about doing that thing. So now it's like this very immaterial, very like ideologically based thing where they can say, oh, it's actually like going to be hate instead of like actually taking something out of a community. So in that sense, like it's a little bit of a weaker release. So it has to be spread out further and multiplied a little bit more and more and more.
Yeah. Well, Christianity solved the problem by, you know, kind of having the scapegoat be Christ, but having him mm-hmm. be the most pure person and essentially kind of breaking that scapegoat mechanism. This is what Rene Girard talks about, that kind of, this is a genius of Christianity, that it realized the necessity of the scapegoat mechanism. But it turned the whole mechanism towards this one most pure person, so that it would be just so absurd that it broke the whole mechanism. And you know, that's kind of, you know, that was his theory related to the Christianity, and why it was so useful, and why it, you know, kind of revolutionized the West, because, you know, turn the other cheek is not a very instinctive thing to, like, I don't know, mm-hmm. tribal people, you know, Bedouins don't do this type of stuff. But Christianity kind of had that innovation. Obviously, if you don't necessarily keep up the good work with that type of stuff, the internal logic of Christianity breaks down. And like you said, Slav, you know, importing people from different cultures does tend to erode this type of stuff as well. Not that Christianity was, you know, doing a great job maintaining itself in the West either, but yeah, everything kind of accelerates when you have total diversity.
Oh yeah. It kind of reminds me of like, someone made a post the other day. I'm not really going anywhere in particular with this, but someone made a post the other day that was like, this is a picture of school in like Denmark or one of these fucking countries. And this is a picture of school in, you know, Baltimore or something. And, you know, one is the kids walking with their fucking hands behind their, whatever the fuck sicko shit they're making kids do, and the mask and all that. Right. And then, you know, then this other country, it's just like, they're just walking around. But also, you look at the other country, they're all blonde hair, fucking, they look like the same child, right? And it's just like, well, like, this might also have something to do with the difficulty, not to, you know, not to come out full of ethno-nationalist or anything, but it's like, you know, it's
taking
it's
the quiet Woods bill.
Right, it's a quiet
don't take
detail
all the pills.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, that's something too with that, Amazon, the Bezos memo, where he was like,
that's a great example.
Increase diversity to break up solidarity, basically. Yeah. That makes sense.
This is kind of like super robust social science. And, you know, it's like Putnam, the guy who discovered this effect, you know, with a total lib. And he I think he hid it for a certain, I don't know, a few years until he actually, you know, pulled the trigger and published it. because it was so incontrovertible. Like, effect size was huge. You know, that diversity is not our strength necessarily. It actually, you know, leads to social erosion and an erosion of social capital. But it's a really tricky one, and I think if this is your purpose as a society, if you want to be the most diverse society, you know, go for it. If this is your value, you know, you just need to make it essentially almost like a religious value. You need to understand the religious nature of it. You can't turn it into science. You know, diversity is our strength. People take it as, you know, they try to, you know, puff it up with all sorts of like social science studies that are not only not replicable, but they're absolutely shit, you know, on the face of it. You know, they're just, you know, N equals 8, you know, sample size of, you know, two of your friends in a college dorm. Right. And they try to, you know, make it seem like it's science. You know, make the most, you make your, country a humanitarian superpower, but understand that this is, you know, this is a unique thing in humanity. This is not natural, and invest all of your powers in making it so. And it might work, but it really won't work if you don't accept the realities underlying all of this stuff. You know, if you just try to pretend, oh, it's science that, you know, everyone is equal and everything's fine and all the groups will just get along perfectly if we just, you know, try harder and, you know, kill the racists or whatever, you know. Yes. Kill the naysayer.
Well, it's funny because it almost, I think reading between the lines of just where progressives are at these days and just like the amount of like racism directed towards white people and, you know, the places where they jettison some liberal values and everything. I think reading between the lines, it kind of like it is kind of a tell of the truth of a lot of this shit, right? Like the old metrics and the way we used to talk about like the strength of diversity and everything are now like punchlines in Jordan Peele movies. You know what I mean? Like the what in the entirety of like Get Out was about is almost kind of like making fun of that shit. And it's like, well, okay, so you can kind of, this is like the sound of a lot of people identifying that this maybe isn't all it was cracked up to be as a goal, and then just, you know, like snatching defeat from the jaws of victory and just doubling down on just like a more insane version of pursuing it.
I think it's also the problem is, you know, they've been trying since the civil rights era, they've been trying to equalize, and there's been, you know, huge investments in, you know, No Child Left Behind and, you know, crazy programs, you know, the war on poverty, all this stuff, and right. Things haven't gotten better. They have in some cases gotten worse, and the social degradation that followed all these, you know, great incentive programs, you know, like the war on poverty, or even worse, you know, single motherhood and all the stuff that, you know, social conservatives like to harp on about, all this type of stuff has gone downhill. And things are not working. So they either, you know, there's two options now. You either accept the fact that there are inherent inequalities in either, you know, across averages or within groups of people, within preferences, you know, like between men and women. Women just typically don't want to be, you know, astrophysicists as much as men, even if, you know, in some cases they might have the capacity. It's just not that interesting. But also they probably don't have the capacity in many cases. You know, I'm just going to go out and say it. So there are differences across groups, between people. This is something that our flavor of liberalism will not accept. So the only other option is to double down on egalitarianism. And mm-hmm. if all these programs don't work, there has to be a ghost in the machine, and the ghost is systemic racism. There are subtle ways that you'll never really, you can't actually sniff out, you can't really expunge, in which, you know, whitey is being bad, or something is going really wrong, and you know, it's that's why why is Ibram Kendi such a big deal? Because no one's got the balls to confront him, because, you know, he's riding on that wave. You know, what's someone gonna say, like, oh, actually, Kendi, you're wrong? You know, what's the counter argument to the ghost in the machine? You know, classical liberalism, it doesn't work. You know, we've been trying that approach. That's essentially what's been tried. It's not going to work if we do it harder. So yeah, it's a conundrum. So people either accept that, you know, there might be differences, or it's we're going to be battling the hydra of systemic whatever until the end of time.
It's the big hydra of white supremacy, and also just, yeah, there's like this assertion that everybody is just kind of gray goo that's been poured into a differently shaped human mold, you know, but there's absolutely nothing that actually really makes us different fundamentally, like is big in, you know, gender ideology and things like that. And yeah. it's kind of funny, like watching some of my like friends and, you know, I still have friends that I've known a while that are definitely like pretty NPC. But I'm certainly not going to cut off longstanding relationships because people are brainwashed due to systems that are outside of their control. But like, you hear them, some of them talk about like their relationship with their girlfriend or whatever. And it's like you're threading this needle while maintaining that like there's basically no difference between the two of you in this relationship. And it's funny to just watch this like completely, I mean, it's doomed. It's completely insane. Usually what ends up happening is that like the man is just completely domesticated and just doesn't have a workable like worldview. But yeah, that's another aspect, because I think, yeah, because a lot of normies that I know in real life too really can't fully buy into the white the specter of white supremacy that hangs over everything a lot of the time, because they're, you know, fucking white, and just because it's so obviously not related to anything in their real life. So everything also just kind of just comes down to like, yeah, what even is a human? You can't define anything.
It's a weird one, especially like in relationships between men and women. Like you said, it really does help the relationship if you can understand these differences. I think it's probably one of the key things if you want to have a good relationship, to be in a relationship with someone who understands the, you know, the kind of inherent differences between men and women. You know, are these set in stone? No, there is some give in the system. There are differences individually. Like, I'm a very disagreeable woman, obviously, but you know, that's not very common. But you know, that's kind of one of the things that make me a little bit different. But at the same time, you know, the best thing I could do with my husband is just to really understand. We have like pretty much almost medieval division of labor in our household. You know, I do the woman's stuff, he does the man's stuff. Things go amazingly. Obviously, I don't know, you know, late night podcasting is probably one of the exceptions, but I don't know, just in my experience, it really, really helps. And I don't know, it's just a great relationship. I can only recommend it to everyone, but it's really a hard thing to sell, especially to women, because it feels so disempowering. Like, oh, I have to cook all the time. Yeah. Is it really that bad? I mean, occasionally he'll cook. That's fine. Especially now with the baby. I'm not saying that he never does it, but you know, it's your responsibility, and he has his own responsibilities, and it's absolutely fine. Everyone knows what they have to do. Everyone knows what their role is. And it's great.
My girlfriend cooks, and I fucking work full time. It's common sense. You know what I mean? And it feels good, and we like it. It's interesting. I was talking with my buddies, someone I know that actually listens to this show. And so I'm going to call him out. But I've known him forever, so it's okay. A lot of political disagreements in his home, to the point where she's vaccinated, he's not, right? She has taken to wearing a mask in their home.
Bro,
when they're together.
What?
In bed while they're sleeping together.
What?
Yeah, I'm sorry, bro. I had to bring it up.
Bless your heart, bro.
At a certain point, like, you're doing your girlfriend or wife a disservice by like allowing this to even fucking happen. You know what I mean? Like it's, I don't know. I don't even want to go too far into it, just to say, I think that one thing that can really
get control your woman, bro.
I'm like unironically saying that. I'm genuinely saying that to a certain extent. And I'm saying that with the understanding too, that cuts both ways. Right. There are ways in which, I mean, look, like if I was going and texting all these other fucking girls, you know, talking to other women, you know, like if my girlfriend just did not react at all, like, no, come on. Right. I mean, just to I think you see this a lot. Like in a lot of relationships, you can, you know, and obviously there's exceptions to everything, right? Everybody knows the guy who, you know, becomes a lot more libbed up, blue pilled kind of guy once he starts dating a girl who he just can't fucking say no to. You know what I mean?
The girl, girlfriend chameleon.
Yeah, exactly. And not even that, but like actually just starting to get radicalized by this shit. And it's like I'm not saying that that's what's happening, you know, in the example that I gave, but at a certain point, like you need to be able to fucking like assert your fucking values at some point.
I mean, she is acting like that because he's not asserting his fucking values. Like, you know,
exactly.
If he would stand up to her, you know, that would get, you know, that would put some fire in that relationship, because that sounds absolutely insane. You know, I think men often underestimate how far they can push it with standing up to women, and not even just how far they can push it, like how much is expected of them in terms of standing up. You know, you should, yep. Like that's your responsibility. You know, we need you to be strong. We need you to, you know, put your foot down. You know, if you never do that, then that relationship is doomed, or, you know, it might continue, but there's not really respect in there. Yeah. Like,
well, even in any healthy relationship, even if you're not even looking at like a gender lens, just telling your partner, or who, even if it's not even like a romantic relationship, it could be platonic. If you're a friend with someone, whatever, if you realize that they're doing some crazy bullshit, you got to call them out on it, because that's what you fucking do. And that's how you like maintain a relationship. And then if there's a problem with it, you call them out on it. You try to work through it. And if it doesn't work out, then that relationship is no longer.
This is fucking 1960s shit with like the the only thing that's forbidden is to forbid. You know what I mean? Like, it's fucking bullshit. Like, if you're a man, you should have some level of leadership in your household, because like you're sharing a culture with this other person. And, you know, especially if you're bringing kids into the mix and all of that, like you have some capacity of leadership. And all you see in the wide culture generally is basically just repeat it. And I can't blame people for reacting this way, but basically just repeating to young men, like, if you break our social protocols, you will be socially destroyed. And so I don't totally blame people for shrinking from this challenge in life. But it's not functional, and you're going to basically, some voodoo is going to be put on you, and you're going to shrink down and get put in a little glass jar.
I think men kind of need to understand that there's like kind of this valley that they have to cross with being disagreeable and putting their foot down. You know, if you're really agreeable and you go along to get along, you're probably going to have a middling life. You know, you're never going to have a terrible, you know, you're never going to be ostracized in a terrible way. But if you hold your stance, and if you can cross that valley, that deep, dark valley where, you know, people actually, you know, they oppose you and, you know, they're not happy with you, and you get to the other side and you still kind of keep your, you know, you keep frame, you keep your composure, you transcend. You know, people want that. People want that type of leadership. People want, you know, people who can hold their own. And like you said, Sio, it's just, this is also about friends and, you know, being an example in your community of friends. And, you know, that's that kind of spark, that kind of, you know, resistance to friction that almost no one has anymore. You know, everyone folds.
Yeah, there's a lot of freedom you get in getting canceled and sort of conducting yourself the same way regardless.
Yeah.
There's a lot of just after that, then what else is there? You get canceled again.
Yeah, like, that's just called being an adult with principles.
It's like the fool whose response to complex social protocols and expectations is to just right out of the gate just like act in kind of a profane way so that he's just no longer on the hook for any of this bullshit. Yeah, exactly. Like before I even, you know, say word one, I'm just gonna throw my middle finger up to this shit. It's interesting because I think that with COVID stuff, I was talking to somebody about this, you know, recently. I think that COVID has really like taught me the importance of adjusting my expectations and being wary of people that are weak. And I don't mean that in like this really brutal kind of like social Darwinist way where it's, you know, where it's just like, I guess just to say it in a hateful way or something, but specifically, you know, knowing there's been a lot of weird gray areas with COVID protocol, social stuff, things like that. And, you know, I'm not vaccinated. And there's just times where, you know, there's a lot of people, you know, Alex, you just mentioned people don't have resistance for friction anymore. Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, at least, right? This situation has removed all doubts about who does and does not qualify in that camp, you know, and they can't back you up in situations where you need support and you need help from somebody, and you need a little bit of dependability, because they're weak and they can't possibly, you know, tolerate an uncomfortable situation for somebody that they might, you know, have some kind of claim to have some loyalty to. And you just can't invest in that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but there's also if the state is like literally like going around like with choppers in Australia or whatever, you know what I mean? I think there's this thing on the right where it's like, oh, I'm like BAP, I'm naked and bodybuilding, and I'm just gonna be Chad and Giga Chad my way through all this. It's like, bro, we're talking about big collective things, and like your individual actions don't really mean shit. In my opinion, I don't believe in like.
Well, we're literally talking in like about individual. We're literally talking about interpersonal relationships right now. Like, I'm not like.
You're saying like the COVID authoritarianism in general, right?
Yeah, like, exactly. Like, but well, in like just the entire enforcement of it just being this like weird, decentralized, constantly vaguely defined social protocols, right? I'm not talking about like, oh man, like my friend didn't, you know, risk going to the gulag for me or something like that. It's always just like a little shit, right? Which, of course, I can't think of an example of right now.
You said the gray areas, right? Like the in-between moments where it's like, what are we supposed to do? Is this the rule? Is that the rule?
Exactly.
Where it hasn't been clearly laid out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what everything is now, because it's like this passing of the buck just like across all types of like across organization of production. You know, you have middle managers and you have lower managers, and none of them really have any power. And the people that you're talking to on the phone for customer service, none of them really know what's going on. They don't have any power to tell you what's going on. They don't really know themselves either. And so it's just like that just goes across all fucking society, and it just reaches out and reaches out until no one knows down from up.
Yeah, and I remember like to CRK's point, I saw this post the other day from that Alexander Cortez. He's like a workout right wing guy or something, and he had some post he made about like, if you're not willing to just, you know, completely just burn everything down in your life and start over, then you don't love yourself.
Build the right wing commune.
Basically,
and you don't. What do you say?
He's like, then you don't truly love yourself.
Right, right.
And it's like that is insane. That's insane. And that's also like, that is like, I get what he's saying. And obviously there's like a kernel of truth. Right. But I think actually like Paul Scholes had the response to it, which is just like, this is, you know, he basically said, you know, this is the thought of someone who's not in a relationship. Right. Like, yeah. You know, that's what it is. Right. And that's, it's hyper individual. And so, you know, to your point, it's totally not lost on me, and you're right.
This is my problem that I have with kind of like with BAPism and this type of, you know, kind of ubermensch right wing individualism. It really is like super atomized. It's like, it's okay, it's about the pirate philosopher king, not his children because they're in the longhouse, not his wife, she's in the longhouse, you know, any sort of adjacents, or, you know, except for like the band of brothers or whatever, equals among kings and all this type of stuff,
right? The pirates,
yeah, the other pirates on the ship or whatever. Right. There is no dependency, there is no kind of meta story, there is no entanglement for these guys. You know, they are, you know, masters of the universe. And I think, you know, Earth can support, you know, I do buy into the great man of history theory, but there needs to be kind of at least a parallel system that takes care, that includes the longhouse in some way, or, you know, wherever someone has the children. You know, we need to be producing more pirates, at least, you know, the pirates need to have a mechanism to see more pirates in the future. So, right. Yeah, that's, I think, like, you know, like this guy as well, this Rex guy, it's all about you know, oh, you know, take your crypto earnings and chisel your abs and stuff like that. But, you know, it's there is no community in that at all, except for, I don't know, subscribers to his Men of Iron, I don't know, Discord group.
Yeah, you're going to wake up one day. You're going to be the better part of 60. You're going to be completely alone with no one to share your life with. But at least you're going to have those Hyperborean gains, bro.
Yeah, I mean, no disrespect to Bap. I like Bap. He's funny. I think he's mad funny. But yeah, all those. Yeah, what you were just talking about, Alex, like all those, this sort of this grift of like self-help, reclaim your masculinity by yourself in a vacuum type thing.
Yeah, but, I think there's a lot of space for that. But, you know, I think a lot of people just see that as, you know, kind of an all-encompassing worldview. And that, you know, all truth is derived from this kind of, you know, Hyperborean bodybuilding. And I think some truth is derived, and especially if you're like between, I don't know, 16 to 35, a lot of truth is derived. But, you know, later in life, you can't really be the you know, very, I don't know, pectoral pirate, I think, or at least it feels a little bit lame to me. But maybe, I mean, I represent the longhouse, so obviously I'm going to say that. But yeah,
it sounds lucrative, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think like what you're saying, Sirke, about it being you trying to do that in a vacuum is very like important there, because I think that's where they all kind of fall short, like all these types of ideologies. And I think that like it's the same kind of thing with like a Jordan Peterson when he's talking about clean your room. And then people are like, that's actually how you need to fix all of life. Well, of course, you need to take individual like accountability for your lot and do exactly what you can to like make yourself a fucking man and take care of your life and the people around you and be a useful part of your community. And you got to put your own like life mask on or whatever the fuck before you can help other people. That kind of idea. But like, it doesn't stop there, right? Like that's only one piece of the puzzle. And there needs to be some sort of program or at least some sort of side to your ideology or analysis, whatever it is you want to call it, that incorporates a collective approach as well.
Yeah. The qualifier I put on it is it's kind of a break glass in case of emergency sort of approach to things. And that emergency is just that like masculinity is trapped in just a burning fucking building right now.
You're
and
turning
so like
gay.
Yeah. Yeah. They're Desmond is amazing, whatever. Right. Like, and so I think that it works for people in a pinch. I think that it's almost a hierarchy of, you know, priorities, you know. I remember I don't know, I've known a lot of people, you know, I went through like recovery myself, and so I've known a lot of people that have been, you know, that have gotten sober over the last number of years, and I know a significant number of those people who have gotten a lot out of this shit that we're talking about.
Sure,
right?
Definitely.
And I think that that's great. When we get into the realm of prescribing this at a wide scale for like political action and things, it's like, I mean, I just finally read Bronze Age Mindset like a couple weeks ago, and like I'm reading it and it's like, yeah, like this, you know, it's fun and everything, but like this is also like nightmare scenario stuff. Like it's pirate world stuff, right? I don't know. I mean, and that just gets into like, I don't know that like the first condition that needs to be met for like my case for change needs to be that like everyone's quality of life just completely dive bombs and everything gets worse. That's like not the first step that I want to begin on.
Yeah.
But I know that's actually something I wanted to ask you about, Alex, but because I know that a lot of people, you know, feel differently on that, but I feel like if you're starting there, then you're kind of, well, I won't say my opinion. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that book is probably a very long shit post as well. It's like, you know, it's, I don't think necessarily that he is advocating for like apocalyptic piracy and all this type of stuff. I think it's a metaphor for a type of man that's, you know, almost extinct. And the element in which this man thrives is kind of this, you know, apocalyptic Mad Max type scenario. You know, he's kind of above history. He doesn't really care where he is. You know, he kind of lives for himself, you know, the great man of history. And he also kind of plugs it into this very visceral, very, you know, elemental stuff, you know, that really is missing. Like you said, like, this is really the break glass in case of emergency type of vibe, because he's kind of communicating a vibe rather than, you know, prescribing a lifestyle, you know. So yeah, I mean, that's the energy that's missing, and I think that's why the book is so popular. You know, I don't think a lot of people really know how to interpret it. You know, you can't really, you know, it's not like Fight Club or anything. It's you can't really do Bronze Age mindset. You know, even the title is like, you know, mindset. It's kind of like, okay, this is kind of the feeling that you should have if you were to be that this type of man. You know, the energy that, you know, he wants to describe, and I think it really is missing. Like, you know, women are howling for it, I have to say, in our current constellation. You know, people really want, you know, that type of manliness to step up. But the problem is, it is viciously anti-egalitarian. And as much as our current situation is egalitarian, and it is very egalitarian, at least it's pushing egalitarianism through every pore, and it really is emasculating anyone who wants to, you know, raise their head above the parapet. You know, Bronze Age mindset is the quintessential anti-egalitarian manifesto. It is about the man, you know, the Übermensch, in a way, who is above history, who is above, you know, everything, who's connected to biology in a way that, you know, this gray goo egalitarianism doesn't let you be. So I think that's why it's so popular. It's just like spitting in the face of the lie of egalitarianism. And yeah, it's, you know, it doesn't really tell you what to do, which I think is a very good quality of the book, because it would have gotten in much more trouble if it did.
Well, one of my favorite aspects of it is that one of the only things I can think of that he actually does outright recommend people do, two things I can remember: don't ever cop to having read the book to normal people, and he encourages people to carry out fun pranks. And I think that those are both very good pieces of advice.
Impractical Jokers Pilled.
Yeah, no, it's 100% just Practical Jokers Pilled.
I would say, like, I think one of the other ends of this is, like, some of my friends or people I've known that, like, get caught up in, like, this like self-help hyper-masculinity thing, and like they get very it kind of backfires in this weird way where they start to like overanalyze, like, my chin is slightly too wide.
Yes.
They get into this weird physiognomy shit, and honestly, mm-hmm. like, I know it's supposed to be like Chad and all that, sure, I get that, but like,
no,
it sounds mad feminine.
That's
to me.
A psyop to get dudes into being more feminine and caring about online stupid bullshit. Like, okay, super, let's take it back 10 about, like, years. They're 10 like, years, no one wanted. No male was using Instagram. No male is posting like selfies of themselves on the fucking internet. No male is doing any of that bullshit. They're making fun of their friends that are doing that because it's some dumb bullshit. Yeah, and then next thing you know, now it's like, well, actually, it's Chad. If you have your chest facing this one way and your pics, so you need to be really, like, really careful about how you're looking.
Yeah.
You got to do all this stuff. You got to analyze your presence online. Shut the fuck up. That's gay bullshit, dude.
It's literally self-consciousness. And it's like, you know, usually from girls, I'll hear like, oh, you know, my legs are not in proportion to my torso and all this weird shit. I'd be like, damn, I didn't even notice that. Like, what? Like, and now I hear that from guys and I'm like, all right, see, this is like, mm-hmm. I don't know, whatever. I'm not into all that, but like, I don't know. I like your friend, whatever, with the COVID, with the girlfriend, whatever. Like, I don't know. I would probably not be with that girl personally. I don't think I could handle that. You know what I mean? But I don't know if, I don't feel like, but that would just be leaving. I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like, I think this is the big reason why I don't identify as a right winger, or like I have a big, like, big block in my brain for a lot of this. Is like, I don't believe people are locked into their identity. Like, it often sounds like you're chained to your, like your given set. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really believe that. I don't feel any pressure to like, to fulfill any like role as like a masculine figure or whatever. I don't feel any of that. I never do. Like, my race either. Like, I've never felt any of that. I really don't. I mean, yeah, when I was younger, sure. Like, there's moments where you feel like, oh, I got to do this to impress these people or whatever. As I get older, like, I don't really feel that. I don't know. I don't know if diversity is like a like, I like diversity is our strength, right? That's like a funny quote, or that's like a funny phrase or whatever. But like, I don't really necessarily believe like it's the death of our society. I don't really believe it's like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't see that. I don't think it's, I think it brings new obstacles for mm-hmm. sure. But I think throughout the course of history, this is fairly new. Like Alex was saying, obviously this is fairly new, this mix here. We've been mixing from the beginning. You know what I mean? Like culturally, yeah. Racially, everything. Like, I don't know. I feel like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's all been interwoven.
I agree with you. You know, the thing is, you know, if we take it as it should be taken, like, you know, take it with its challenges and try to overcome those challenges from mm-hmm. a perspective of, okay, being conscious and accepting that, okay, you know, this is the type of society we want. You know, we think this is virtuous. We think this is good to have a diverse society. Mm-hmm. And then let's do what is necessary, you know, accepting the realities of, you know, the challenge that we're facing. Mm-hmm. But the problem that we have now is not that, you know, it's that it's all kind of swept under the rug and you're ostracized right. if you point out the challenges and
right.
It's not ideal. that's for sure.
Yeah. I just wonder like what the solution is, because then the only other solution is to like segment and stratify mm-hmm. everybody yeah. by their identity, which, you know, and lock everybody like, all right, you need to fall into your role or there'll be consequences. And a lot of this stuff sort of like that mentality, yeah, obviously, like it doesn't make
it's
any sense.
It's ultimately a no go from me, dog.
Yeah. Well, and look, I mean, at the end of the day, like international travel isn't really going back in the bag, you know.
That's what I wonder too. Like, I just wonder, like, how do we do it? Say I'm down. Like, say I'm mm-hmm. down to listen. I'm like, hey, let's try. Let's see what we could do about it. I don't see it. Like, I don't know how to do it. Like,
yeah,
you know, it seems like we're stuck with this.
I think it's really worth criticizing insofar as it's a justifying myth for the fact that, like, again, like, just we bring in immigrants for economic growth when, like, I drive past like a handful of fucking homeless camps. Mm-hmm. Every time I go to fucking work. And again, this has very little to do with the value of diversity in and of itself. And this has very little to do with immigrants themselves. And this really has just everything to do with the model.
Well, yeah. Well, it's very functional for a specific class of people. And I think that's what it comes down to ultimately.
The globalist, like, pedophiles.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The ownership class. I mean, they're going to do that shit. They're not going for economic growth. They're going for their own personal profit. There's a difference between economic growth and individual's growth of profit. And so that's what they're right. going for here. Right. They're reaching for and they're importing these people, not because they think, oh, actually diversity is going to make us strong, blah, blah. They're doing it because then they can have a labor base that they can pay under the table, or they can have paid bullshit wages. They want to maybe have them come in and they can put them through the legalization process or whatever. And then they can pay them, you know, way less wages than what they would pay people who are used to the quality of life and labor expectations here. You can bring in a different class of people who, or a different type of people in the same class that don't have the same material understanding of the place that they're in at the time. So then they can offer them these things and these little back-end things and undercut our own labor market. Now, the solution isn't to say like, oh, fuck these people. This dude that's right here is taking my job. The solution is, why are these rich motherfuckers destroying my labor share in the market? And why are they making it so that I can't have jobs? Why is it actually like an incentive to be able to do that and leave people within your own country who are here already starving and dying on the street?
Yeah, never.
Why don't we try to rehouse those people, rehabilitate those people, and make them proper workers?
Never underestimate how much of an incentive it is to destroy those people, because, you know, the elite, the leadership class exists, defines itself in contrast to the non-elite, the people they mm-hmm. you know, they distinguish themselves from. So there is kind of an upside in destroying those people or making their life very hard. So it's not just necessarily, oh, what's my material incentive? In a way, it's also, you know, your immaterial incentive is that you get to piss on your enemies, which are, you know, the people in flyover country, Hicksville, you know, the unwashed masses that you're elevated from, you know. So, yeah.
Right. The idea like our this empire we live in is collapsing, and the only thing anyone's ever talking about is how some guy in a 4x4 has retrograde ideas about, you know, women or sex.